Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
That won't necessarily be the case because some of these coaches may well return. And we do have some pretty good pitching coach candidates inside the organization. So it might ultimately be a promotion with the new pitching coach. Could still come from outside, but I just wanted to make the point that when I reference the opportunity to sort of hear from outside voices and hear of a way to get a little bit more of a objective, perhaps, or non-insular view of where we're at as an organization and about how we do things, the manager interview process is a great opportunity to do that. That may well extend to the pitching coach interview process. I suspect it will, but it's not like that the managerial decision forced us to need to have an opening on the pitching side.
White Sox general manager Rick Hahn talked about kind of what he's looking for moving forward, replacing Rick Renteria and Don Cooper with his team heading into 2021. And the word is that Tony La Russa is the front runner for the White Sox managerial job. If he says yes, it's his, apparently. Zach Zaidman with you until 5 o'clock, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. If you're just tuning in, man, you've missed a lot already. We went hardcore Bears earlier in the program, talking some football with Tom Thayer as the Bears visit Carolina tomorrow afternoon, looking to improve to 5-1. And with all the talk over the last 10 days about improving the offense, I wonder what kind of offense we're really going to see. Are we going to see some explosive plays? Are we going to see a team that puts more than 21 points on the board? Because it is unbelievable to me with the investment in fixing the offense that the Bears made during the offseason, adding a whole bunch of new tight ends, all those new offensive assistants, adding some speed opposite Allen Robinson, adding a new quarterback in Nick Foles. It's amazing to me with all that I just mentioned that this team offensively is number 27 in a 32-team NFL in scoring at 21 points per game, thanks in large part to the 27th-ranked offense in the NFL. And you don't want to squander what's been a very good defense for another season. We talked a little bit of Cubs, White Sox, MLB playoffs with Ron Coomer last hour. By the way, game number 6, Dodgers leading the Braves 3-0. LA trying to force a game 7 later on tonight. Houston and Tampa Bay play game 7 of the American League Championship Series. There's a whole lot going on in football. Earlier today, Trevor Lawrence, who will be the number 1 pick of the 2021 NFL draft, threw for nearly 400 yards and 5 touchdowns in the first half and fell 14 passes shy of breaking Russell Wilson's ACC record for most consecutive attempts without an interception. Clemson with a huge game, beating Georgia Tech big, but Lawrence was picked off by Georgia Tech's Zamari Walton late in the first quarter, and Lawrence's streak ended at 366 straight passes without an interception. Wow. That's why he's going to be the number 1 pick of the NFL draft. And you know what's really frustrating? This is a total aside before I get to your White Sox calls about Tony La Russa. But a quick aside here. This is what's so frustrating about the Bears deciding to pick Mitchell Trubisky. It's not the fact that they didn't identify what Patrick Mahomes would be. A lot of teams didn't. What's frustrating is you had Deshaun Watson, with an absolute perfect resume, a perfect resume. And you were lucky enough that this was a year where the team picking first didn't take a quarterback. So Deshaun Watson is there. And you overthink it. That's what's so frustrating about what transpired in 2017. But the Bears are 4-1, excellent opportunity to go to 5-1. They've got a really good defense again. They got lucky that Khalil Mack was made available. They made the trade for him. He automatically puts them in a position every single season to compete for something. And hopefully they can turn what's been a really bad offense into an average offense, complement the defense, and voila, maybe you can get something really special going by the end of the season. All right, that's my football take. But a lot of baseball here. We're going to hear from Joe Maddon. Excellent interview earlier today on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce and Spiegs. We'll play that later on this hour. But I want to hear from you as to why there's been such a negative reaction to the news that Tony La Russa is the front runner for the White Sox job. I don't get it. 312-644-6767. Zach Zabin with you until 5. Out to the phones we go. Let's start with George in Old Town. George, you're on the score. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Zach. I just want to say, give Jerry Reinsdorf credit for what he's done, not only for just the White Sox, but for the Bulls. We're going to a tough year where he doesn't quite know how much the seats are going to be filled at White Sox Park, but he's put together a phenomenal nucleus with Rick Hahn. I think that, you know, with La Russa being such a close associate, kind of consultant for him, he feels comfortable for him. You know, ownership has its privileges. I don't begrudge Jerry. He might be able to put together a package deal. He knows he needs more pitching to win a World Series. Tony does not have any bad relationships with any of the current pitchers out there. He's respected because of his record. I have no problem with it. I'm not saying that he's the one that should be selected. It's kind of up to the ownership and to Mr. Hahn. But I think it gives a little bit more perspective. I don't understand why people don't understand how much, you know, is at stake for the owners in it. They just seem to think that they're multimillionaires or billionaires, but they have to run a business.
They do, and they also get an opportunity to call the shots sometimes. But I don't think that's 100% the case here. Clearly, Jerry Reinsdorf is fond of Tony La Russa, but I'm guessing that if you talk to Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, and if Tony La Russa is up to it, meaning both physically and mentally, because he is 76 years old, but if he's into it from that standpoint, you know, you're not questioning whether or not he's sharp or understands the game or can adjust to baseball today. What you're questioning is whether or not, just from a fit standpoint, you know, being older in age, can you do it? I mean, you're seeing Dusty Baker do it at 71 very effectively with the Houston Astros. But the simple question is this. I'm guessing from a baseball standpoint, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams would say Tony La Russa is a significant upgrade over Rick Renteria. And when you just look at it from that standpoint, with the nucleus the White Sox have established, how does that make you worse? How does that make you worse? 312-644-6767. Joe is in Mount Greenwood. Hi, Joe. You're on the score.
For taking my call, Zach, man. I don't have a problem with La Russa per se, but I think in the case of Renteria and the White Sox, you have to figure out who's really making the calls. Did Renteria put Encarnacion in the lineup every day because he was told to, or because he doesn't know any better? Was he putting Madrigal at second base when you had Mendick who could play better defense? Was he putting Omar in right field instead of putting in Engel when Engel was hitting the ball really well and had a home run and a double in the first game and then had a couple more hits in the third game? Then he puts Garcia in after he hasn't played a whole month. If he was making those calls, he deserves to be fired. And he can't make a pimple on Rossi's behind. Rossi's a good manager, and he did the best he could with what he had.
Joe, thanks for the call. Yeah. I really appreciate it. But this is not a comparison between the White Sox and the Cubs. Nothing the Cubs did this year, nothing the Cubs have done, influences why Rick Renteria was let go as the White Sox manager. Is life fair? No, life isn't fair. We're all living through a period in time right now where life isn't fair. There's a lot of stuff that I'm doing on a daily basis that I can't stand doing, but life isn't fair. And I'm sure most of you listening feel the same way about different situations that you have in your respective lives. I think this is pure business. The White Sox believe there are better options for them to take this team to the next level. That's why they decided to part ways with Rick Renteria. Tony La Russa is one of those options. AJ Hinch is another. Alex Cora is another option. They just believe the team can get to another level with a different manager. I don't have a problem with that. The Cubs felt that way too, and unfortunately, Rick Renteria has dealt with this now twice in his career. But unfortunately, life isn't fair. It's not. But saying that, you can't sit here and argue in any fashion that Rick Renteria is a better manager than Tony La Russa or a better manager than A.J. Hinch, because that's not true. Aaron in Berwyn, you're on the score. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Zach, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
You do really good work over the years, so I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
First thing, Jerry Reinsdorf is the chairman. He's the chairman of two teams. He recognized, and I think this stems from the Bulls, he recognized the fans, their disinvolvement of his teams. And he sees this White Sox team as a team that is ready to go. And he reached out to Tony La Russa. And I think it's interesting because I think he wants to simply sit down with him in an interview and pick his brain. Because I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf wants to hire A.J. Hinch and have that manager who is Randy Astros and they cheated, as you said, that black eye. I think he wants to talk to Tony La Russa and ask him, you know, what should I go? And do you want the job? You know? And from what I've heard from the score and all the experts and Peter Gammons, Tony La Russa is still baseball sharp.
He is. That's an excellent point. And again, I've said this a lot of times this afternoon. It's not like he's just kicking back in some incredible locale on some island somewhere, sipping mixed drinks, smoking a cigar, and just totally removed from the game of baseball. He hasn't managed since 2011, but he's been very much involved with baseball. And he's been part of three different front offices, including a championship front office in Boston in 2018. He's been involved a little bit with Major League Baseball's hierarchy as well. I mean, he's seen a lot of different things. He's clearly been invested in the way the game is played today. And this notion that, well, you know, you can't expect him to be able to manage if he hasn't done it since 2011. How many managers have we seen in the last few years without any managerial or coaching experience hop out of a broadcast booth and have immediate success with their ball clubs? Saw it this year on the north side with David Ross. Aaron Boone has done a nice job with the New York Yankees. Right? I mean, there have been other guys with little experience. Dave Roberts with the Dodgers, Alex Cora with the Red Sox before the cheating scandal got him. I mean, you can't question the kind of manager Tony La Russa is. You're not number three on the all-time wins list for managers unless you're shrewd, have the ability to adapt, and are innovative. That's Tony La Russa. You know, if anything, he was at the cutting edge of the kind of baseball we're seeing today. Now, you may not like him personally because of his views that have nothing to do with baseball. That's different. But just from a baseball standpoint, if he's up to it, feels physically fine. And again, we see this isn't John Fox coming to the Bears and stealing money.
with a rebuilding team. This is a guy who would be taking over quite a nucleus. And he's got a championship pedigree and know-how to infuse into the mix. I don't think that's a bad thing. 312-644-6767. Back out to the phones we go. David in Winfield, you're on the Score. Hi, David.
Hi, Zach. Great show.
Thank you.
I would never argue that Tony Russo isn't qualified to do anything he wants in Major League Baseball. But the White Sox are making a mistake with him. And I'll use the comparison to the Cubs. When Epstein realized it was time, he went out and hired Madden. And Madden took them the next 5 years, 4 to 5 years with the championship, and then the transition in this last year to Ross. Tony La Russa has the same roster, meaning young, controllable players, and the windows the next 5 to 6 years. No way does Tony La Russa manage this team for the next 6 years. He's probably 2 or 3 years at best, and now you have to introduce a new manager. If anything, you could flip it and say La Russa could have been the replacement for the Cubs to finish the championship window. But why wouldn't you go out and get a name the name, Alomar, the bench coach from Tampa Bay, Hitch, Cora, who will take them through the 5 years and have that consistency? That's where I think the Sox are making a mistake with La Russa. It's not his qualifications. It's how long will he be able to actually manage this core of players?
I get that point, and that's a very fair one to make. I would submit that what it tells you, just the fact that they're talking about La Russa right now, what it tells you is they're all in that next year the goal is to win a championship. They're all in. It tells you that this year they felt they had a team that would be right on the cusp of winning a championship, and they were angry that the team floundered down the stretch of the regular season after making the playoffs, even though it was a big surprise to us that they were able to have the season that they did. But clearly it wasn't a surprise to ownership and upper management with the White Sox, because that was what they expected, and they were upset that opportunities were squandered in the first round against the A's. So what it tells me is the goal isn't to, yes, obviously they put together a team just of pure talent and youth that they're hoping for a big window of sustained success. That doesn't always mean that you win a championship. You know, remember the Tigers under Dave Dombrowski, you know, those teams that had Verlander and Miguel Cabrera when he was much younger and Max Scherzer. Those teams had the opportunity to win a championship every single season. They weren't able to do that. Every single year, they sustained success and had deep runs and made the playoffs. They couldn't knock the door through and win that title with Jim Leland as their manager. It doesn't always happen. The championships aren't guaranteed. But what the White Sox are telling you is, it's on. We're not waiting. Next year, it's on. If you hire Tony La Russa, you're saying championship or bust 2021. Championship or bust 2022. Don't you love that? After all the losing that you had to watch in order to put together the club that you have now. Don't you love that? Let's take a timeout. When we come back, I want to replay just that wonderful interview from this morning. A candid, honest Joe Madden. Is there any other kind? He was on Inside the House with Bruce and Spriggs. We'll replay it for you next, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Zach Zaidman on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Here until 5 o'clock, after 2 innings of play, Game 6 of the National League Championship Series, the Dodgers lead the Braves 3-0. Seager and Turner both going deep for L.A. Meantime, in the fourth quarter in South Bend, fourth-ranked Notre Dame is having a big test today against Louisville, an unexpected one. Irish leading Louisville 12-7 with under 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Nick Saban, by the way, the Alabama coach, and Alabama is due to play Georgia tonight. Saban tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday. Since then, He's taken three tests, including one today. All of them have come back negative. So under SEC rules, Wednesday's positive test is now considered a false positive because of the back-to-back-to-back negative tests since then. And Saban will be allowed to coach his team, the second-ranked Crimson Tide, against number three Georgia this evening. I just wish all Americans could have access to the same kind of testing, not just the most famous people in our country. But that's a story for another time. All right, I promised this earlier. This morning, former Cubs manager and current Angels skipper, Joe Maddon, spent what I thought was just a wonderful visit on Inside the Clubhouse this morning, talking ball and more with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on The Score. Take a listen.
Good morning, guys, and I'll meet you tonight at Steak 48 for a nice steak dinner. Let's do that.
That sounds great. Absolutely fantastic.
Joe,
getting through the COVID year of 2020 and the bubble that was created for baseball, first of all, I'm shocked that more people aren't giving Major League Baseball and the people in it and the teams more credit for being able to get through this and the very low number of cases that were positive and people able to get through with this. As far as your team and your situation, what were the biggest challenges?
Well, you're right. I mean, I don't think the MLB and the commissioner's office has gotten nearly enough credit for this. We had some illnesses before guys got there, but once they got there, everything kind of settled in. I think there's a lot of self-discipline regarding baseball players and how they get into routine. And so the difficult part, I guess, was adjusting the routine. We had a spit every other day, which was better than having something stuck up your nose, obviously. So the method they chose made it more amenable to everybody. The distancing component, our clubhouse, for instance, I was in one of the suites down by our dugout. My coaches were lined up by the cross, and then the players had these suites up in the second deck. Each player had a suite so that they were able to distance themselves that way. And then, of course, that utilized the clubhouse to get dressed. So that was all Billy Epler. Billy came up with that idea, so it permitted us to play along with the rules in place, the procedures, protocols we got used to. In the beginning, they were annoying. But then all you started doing is holding your spit before you got to the ballpark and then spit it up and go in, because sometimes if you got that dry mouth, it takes forever. So it's all about getting into a new routine. And once we established that, honestly, not so bad.
Joe, have really valued all the baseball conversation through the years. Love how curious and passionate your baseball mind is. And I'm wondering, in this weird little tiny sample size of a season with a brand new club, what did you learn? What did you add to, you know, your enormous book of knowledge in terms of baseball? What did you learn this year about the game or about the modern player or whatever comes to mind?
Okay, whatever comes to mind, I really, really want to have the Angels, and we're working on it right now, be comprised more of some old school tenets combined with the new. I really want real baseball being taught again. I want us to be able to lock in and participate in a variety of different games, different methods. In other words, not just trying to hit the home run, not just trying to throw an elevated fastball, not talking about taking walks, always worried about somebody getting thrown out on the bases, et cetera. I really, and I've said this 1,000 times, I think, or maybe it's 1,001, I really want to preach the liberal arts component of this game. I still want analytics, but I want it put in its place. I don't want it just to be the overriding factor in baseball. I think that's what's gotten us into this situation. Although the playoff games have been interesting, because I think, and I give you guys credit, they're all playing hard, man. It's a real-looking baseball game. If you're watching on TV, you can't tell that there's nobody in the stands. And that's a credit to everybody playing those games, because it's not easy to go out there and self-motivate like that, regardless of what anybody wants to say. It's true. So I'm really impressed with that. But moving the game forward, what's really noticeable to me also, I watched a little bit last night, is time between pitches. And that's where pace matters. And that's where I like the clock. The only the one thing I like or wouldn't mind is that being instituted, whereas some of the other things taken away. But I also think to move this whole game forward, a more traditional method of play should and would, I think, attract more variety of different kinds of fans where the ball is put in play, athleticism is noticed, et cetera. I'd like to see it get back to that. So that's where we're moving with the Angels.
You know, Joe, it's interesting. You're walking back a little bit of metrics, even though I know you're a very firm and strong metrics guy that that has really strong ideas about how they're used. And we're the great story in Chicago right now is the consideration of Tony La Russa possibly being offered the Chicago White Sox job at age 76 to manage next year. Your relationship and your time with Tony this year, I know you had from early February until about March 8th or 9th when baseball stopped to talk to Tony on a regular basis, him being a part of the Angels along with you. And what are your thoughts about where Tony La Russa is as a baseball man in 2020?
Well, first of all, he and I had a great relationship, and it was well beyond that. I mean, yeah, we were like together every day in camp, and constantly, I don't mean like sometimes, constantly throwing thoughts back and forth. I don't care. You talk about hitting, bunting, opposite field, pitching, first pitch strikes, location, defense, house, I mean, everything, just name it, including analytics. And I'd love, you know, honest Tony 76 gives me more years doing this, which I would dig. So go Tony. His method of thinking is contemporary, but it is laced with old school tenets. And I think that's the right way to do it. I do. And he obviously has some experience and he knows how to win. And trust me, the fire is alive and burning hotly. We had some great conversations. I don't mean good. And I learned a lot from him. And I'd like to think he took some things from me also. We have a lot of common friends that would be intermingled into the conversation also. We've talked about how we had done things in the past and present. And he's one of those dudes that's dripping with common sense. And I love that. I mean, that's what I've often said with about Gene Mock. That's what one of the things I got from Gene was, God, he could reduce it so quickly and get to the essence so easily. And that's what Tony does. And believe me, man, there's no, don't let the number fool you, boys and girls. This guy's totally engaged and into it. So I'm watching. I haven't spoken to him. I really haven't. I've been talking to everybody else. I'm just trying to help, you know, get this thing together. But I'll get back to him and we'll get together. But I'm a big fan.
Do you suspect that he would take this job, this White Sox job, if it's offered? It's an awful good one.
Honestly, I swear I don't know, Maddie. We haven't even that when that came up a couple of days ago, and I talked to Bruce about it. I had not even heard anything about that, and Tony has not called me at all, not even once. So I've been inkling to give him a blast, which I will pretty soon. But I've been following it closely. And you know, Jerry, I love Jerry too. Jerry and I become somewhat of friends just through the winter meeting, sitting down, having lunches with him and his boys down at the Triangle down there by Gibson's. I just enjoy all that kind of stuff. That's, like I said, a larger version of where I'm living right now, in Hazleton and Sugarloaf. So I just wish them nothing but the greatest success. Jerry's wonderful, and I've really grown to like Tony a lot too.
So age, nobody knows about managing at different ages more than you do. Mm-hmm. You did it in the minor leagues as a very young man. You did it in the major leagues as a middle-aged guy. Now you're trending toward your 70s and still managing at a high level. What are the challenges for a manager, including age, but regardless of age, as far as pacing himself? I don't think anybody paces himself better than what I've seen you do with the Cubs over those 5 years, as far as having outside things that you did, not taking baseball games home with you every night, turning the switch back on when you walked into the ballpark. What is the mechanism that Tony La Russa would need to do to manage, not necessarily at the chronological age of 76, but just the wear and tear factor of what baseball can do to you for 200 games during the baseball season?
Three things pop. Remaining contemporary, creating balance, and a real healthy routine. I think that's the three things with me. And the contemporaryism, I learned that from Jimmy Reese. Jimmy was in his 80s and 90s, and he was still coming to the ballpark every day with the Angels, and everybody gravitated toward him. I mean, Abbott, Langston, and Finley could not get enough of Jimmy, as well as everybody else. He, Jimmy and I were like good friends, and he was very encouraging to me as a young coach growing up. So Jimmy has always remained contemporary. Sense of humor remained contemporary. So you have to understand what's going on right now and adapt and adjust. And then while you do that, you can absolutely incorporate tried and true that you've done in the past. But I think that's big. Balance, like you're talking about. And I've taken games back home, and only when I really think I've had an awful day. It has nothing to do with players, because if a player screws up in a game, nobody feels worse than that guy. And what he needs your support. He needs good words. He needs honesty. Absolutely. He needs to hear it straight up, but he needs your support as much as anything. And that's the one thing I think is absolute balance, man. I had my workout routine. It said, let me get into the routine now too, but the workout and everything else, diet, which is part of your routine, and sleep. I mean, for me, I've really readjusted diet, exercise, sleep patterns, and quite frankly, like, I'm actually drinking like zero alcohol beer right now, and I've really curtailed the wine. I mean, I like to wake up with a clear head. I guess my head's always clear anyway. But it's a routine thing. So it's contemporaryism, it's balance, and it's routine. And then, okay, let's go the other way. Springsteen just brought another album out. He's 71, and the Stones are still doing it. I'm seriously, I look at stuff like that, and that creates motivation for me. So if I create, if I remain contemporary and understand what's going on in the world today, and I create, maintain balance in my life, and then I really work hard on a routine that requires me to be self-disciplined, and the last part is probably that you'd still dig it. I mean, you got to want to do this. You just can't think you want to. You can never just do this for the money, because that'll just absolutely go away. You have to really, really want to wake up and do this. And maybe that might be the most overpowering component of it. But if you're able to fulfill those thoughts, hell yeah, you could do this. You know, obviously, God blessing, willing, with good health. But that's part of the routine, trying to do the best you can with that also.
Springsteen got an emoji, Joe. I think you know, you need an emoji. Getting somebody, get Joe Madden an emoji out there.
What would that be? That'd be driving a. And I got out my 56 Bel Air. It's been back here. My God, does that thing run good? So I don't know, maybe driving a car like that. Actually, I got like a little preview on Springsteen's new album. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, man, name dropper. Speaking of name dropping, did you talk to your guy David Ross this year? I thought a lot of challenges for David Ross. I thought he did a terrific job. How much did you guys have a chance to talk during the course of the year?
Often, actually, you know, before. A lot of texting and then the phone calls. You know, David and I are linked forever. There's so much respect going back and forth. Of course, he's going to do a great job. I mean, as he continues to do this and you know, gains more feel for different situations, none of that surprises. When you catch and caught as long as he has, and pretty much was running some clubhouses himself, the transition would then be You know, I think as he gets a little bit older and then gets away from guys he actually played with, it's going to become somewhat easier, actually, because I actually, in a weird way, did that. Not that I played with them, but when I first managed, I was 27, and I had 24 and 25-year-olders on my team. So you have to create that little bit of a gap. It helps. But David knows the game. David commands respect, great personality. And one of the bigger parts of this job is to be able to relate and be thoughtful and express yourself well media wise, and he does a wonderful job with that. So yeah, we talk often, and I was really happy for him and the group. I mean, I know it didn't end the way they wanted to, but David's going to be really good for many years.
Joe Madden joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes on a Saturday morning. And Joe, the Tommy La Stella story is fascinating. You helped continue and save his career back when he was with the Cubs and walked away from the team for a while. And I know your conversations with Theo Epstein and with Jed Hoyer helped bring him back in a situation where a lot of people questioned it. And then you see the success that he's had recently, and he was with you for a portion of the year before he was traded to Oakland and became an important player on that team. How does Tommy La Stella go from a starting player in Atlanta to a role player with the Cubs, back to a starting player, and now, from my intel, teams like the Cubs looking to make him an important addition to 2021 as to what they want in a ball player going forward.
Amazing, we saw it after. When I first got to know Tommy, and you know, we actually talked in the wintertime, often via phone, and actually invited him back here to one of my events. He was here with him and Joe Namath, were the headliners for one of the winter events. I loved my conversations with Tommy. Very thoughtful guy. Kind of an on deep side. He thinks things all the way through, and he does not say anything lightly that has not been thought all the way through. And I've always appreciated that about him. When he had that problem with us, I mean, the guy sincerely did not want to leave that group. And he was going through some internal turmoil, and I think he was 26 at the time, maybe something like that. I think a lot of times when you become a grown-up, you forget what it's like to be that age, and you forgot all the different thoughts you had in your head and how confused you actually were. And so we don't process all that all the time. But, you know, I know what my age is, but believe me, man, I'm back here now. And I remember clearly all the screw-ups I had back in the day, or how many times I didn't really know what I thought. He went through that moment, and it just required us to be understanding. And the biggest thing there would then be that the teammates understood also. So sometimes that could be an issue. So he goes away and makes it started. He needed to be that guy with us because we were kind of fulfilled everywhere else, and he handled that role beautifully with the Cubs that he did there. But then he gets to the Angels, and it kind of like got bigger and stronger. He really dedicated himself to the weight room, and he's just stronger because when we had him, it was hard to keep him on the field often enough because things would break down, but they don't break down anymore. And again, here's a guy that also has established a great routine power, man. I mean, that's not a joke. I've seen it. It's there. So he goes to Oakland, does well again, and he's going to be sought after. So he just went through like the normal transitions or transformations that we all did at that particular age, doing it on a big stage. You have to be understanding. And I love what he's done and what he's doing right now because we still are very good friends. We stay in constant contact, but we definitely interact, and I'm really happy for him and his family.
It's a really nice story, and he's a really good bat, and he's the kind of bat that the Cubs need. I got to tell you, Joe, they in the playoffs, they looked a lot, those Cubs problems offensively looked a lot like the Cubs problems in past Septembers or other postseasons. A lot of fans noticed and would tell us, hey, maybe it wasn't Madden's fault. You know, it's like, do you look back and feel like any of those offensive issues were pinned on you? Because they're still here. They're still here, Joe.
Oh, not at all. I honest to God, I don't. If that's the case, I didn't even read that. I didn't know that. And how could it possibly be that way? No. It's all about players, and it's not about coaches either, and it's not about philosophy, it's about players. Players have to make adjustments, and part of it is the methods that have been taught in the more recent past where it's pretty much all-or-nothing approach. Mm-hmm. The thing is, if you see teams like Houston being able to grind out at-bats and put the ball in play, look at the base hit Springer had yesterday, for example. It's just that part, and again, a part of that could be compensation. I mean, what are you going to be compensated for? You're just getting compensated for homers and strikeouts are okay. Try to get a walk. All this is interconnected, and a lot of that's not spoken about enough. The guys back there, listen, we won a World Series together, man, and I think actually the youngest group that ever did. So, and before that, just roll back the tape to 2015 and look at that group that almost got it done, but ran into a really, really hot and good Mets staff. And then the next year, listen, there's nothing to lament. Those were really good times, and it's going to be difficult to duplicate that in a 162-game season. Don't forget, this was 60 games this year. It was a different look completely. So in order to, I think, and that's what I was talking, I think, originally about, is to bring back more tried-and-true methods, and part of that would be hitting approach and giving guys a more complete resume with to do in different situations, having a BHAC, a two-strike approach, utilizing the outfield, bunting against a shift, bunting for a hit, all those different things that have to be nurtured in the minor leagues, though, guys. You just can't people think that you could just flip a switch and guys that have not been doing that their whole life can do it. That's a bad assumption. That's not the way it works. So So for a team to really generate and grow and present on a major league level, guys that are able to do all the things that the fans think are easy to do, that has to be done in the minor leagues first, because it's almost, I don't want to say impossible, but it's really difficult to teach that old dog kind of new tricks on the major league level, where they're exposed daily. They are trying not to suck. They don't want to embarrass themselves. Mm-hmm. So you ask somebody to do something new or different under those circumstances, it's not easy.
Joe, in closing with you, we only have a few seconds left, but sure. We appreciate you joining us so much. How much should a team like the Cubs or the Angels relate to the 60-game season as to evaluating their players and trading them or not, or adding or not? How viable is 60 games to player evaluation?
Well, that would be like playing in April and May and then just trying to evaluate what you got. I mean, with us, we were having the Angels. We had for a bit there the best record in September. We were like 14-6 or something like that at one point. And then we lost the first game to the Dodgers, and then I just didn't play anybody after that. But the point was, we were getting better. But the finish line was 2 months. We all knew that. So I would be careful with the evaluations in a two-month season. You get started up, you stop, and then you get started up again. You walk in the ballpark, you got all these different tests. You got family issues where players are worried about family, even when they just go home. That's all prevalent all of a sudden. And then there's no fans in the stands. The adrenaline rush is different. Your prep is different. Everything is different. So you had to get used to a different method. The big thing was to get to the point, like we said right now, because the game has a more normal, intense look right now, as far as I can tell. But yeah, you just got to be a little bit careful, because 60 games, really, that's a smidgen of what a season looks like. And I use this as an example. We were getting better, and then here came the finish line, where some teams may have broken quickly, and then we're starting to go in the other direction. So 60 games also illustrates why 162 is necessary.
Joe, thank you so much for taking the time out today. We continue to value you here so much in Chicago. I know people miss you, and wish you nothing but success with the Angels. Have a great offseason. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
And the feeling's quite mutual, guys. I miss it there, too. I love the city, love the folks. And like you said earlier, walking into Wrigley every day was an absolute, that is a blessing. And that was very fortunate to get to do that for 5 years. You guys be well and best to your families.
Really enjoyable listen, Joe Maddon, the former Cub and current Angel manager, spending some time this morning on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. My reaction to what we just heard? Next, Zach Zaidman with you until 5 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Zach Zaidman on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Our final few minutes here as we say goodbye at the top of the hour. Zach Zaidman with you on The Score. I want to thank our executive producer this afternoon, Jordan Malley, who helped me blast through the speakers of your radio and help craft the show. You know, we just heard that interview from this morning on Inside the Clubhouse with Angels manager Joe Maddon. And yeah, there are a lot of interesting things that, you know, you normally don't take into account, but just the proper player evaluation following a 60-game season. And I know it's difficult. And, you know, you're talking about less than 40% of the season that was played and 2 months, basically. And yet some major decisions going forward are going to be decided based on just 60 games, which is unrealistic. But who's to say that next season isn't going to be a 60-game season? You know, there's no guarantee that next year, just the way the virus is going right now, would you say that you can have a full 162 next year when we have no answers, no reliable treatment medicine, no vaccine? There are a lot of restrictions in terms of what you can do, obviously, with the virus in our midst. There's no guarantee that you have a full 162. All I know is this, that nearly every Major League Baseball team employs IV grads across the board in the front office. These guys are smart enough to come up with a way where they can properly evaluate guys after 60 games. So that I'm not worried about as much. And the thing that really stuck out to me listening to Madden, and I'd love to see it happen, there were so many different experiments that took place in Major League Baseball this season, with having the runner at second base in extra innings, having the seven-inning doubleheaders. Just institute a pitch clock. You want to speed up the pace of play? Institute a pitch clock. It's not going to take away from what makes Major League Baseball Major League Baseball. That's my parting thought for this afternoon. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Hopefully the Bears can come out and improve to 5-1 tomorrow when they visit Carolina to take on the Panthers, and we'll see this revamped offense that they have going after 10 days of them talking about how much the offense has needed to improve. Zach Zaidman saying thank you so much for listening, and so long. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.